Good afternoon. Thank you for coming to Crown Law. On the 29th of October, the Commissioner of Police asked me to consider authorising the prosecution of 12 people under the Terrorism Suppression Act. For reasons which I will briefly summarise in a few moments, I have advised the Commissioner that I am unable to authorise the prosecutions that have been sought under the Terrorism Suppression Act. The responsibility for deciding whether or not to authorise the proposed prosecutions rests with the Solicitor General pursuant to Section 9 of the Constitution Act, and the convention that it is the Solicitor General, rather than the Attorney General, who determines applications of the kind made by the Commissioner in a case such as this. This process ensures that there is no perception of political influence being brought to bear on what is essentially a legal process. In making my decision, I have considered all of the evidence that is available to date, assessed the relevant law, applied the law to the evidence, made an assessment of the likelihood of any prosecutions succeeding, and decided whether or not it is ultimately in the public interest for the prosecutions to proceed. My role is therefore different from the police, who are required to investigate suspected crimes, and in a case like this, place that evidence before me to determine if prosecutions should be brought. The evidence which I have examined has included many hundreds of pages of intercepted communications, a large number of photographs taken by the police during their surveillance operations, as well as video footage of events observed by the police. Regrettably, not all of the evidence that I have been able to consider will be able to be made public. I know that this is a source of frustration for the police, undoubtedly for the media, and I'm sure for the general public. However, I can say that in due course, a significant body of the evidence will enter the public domain during the course of the hearings of the charges brought under the Arms Act against the people whose cases I have considered. In considering in detail all of the available evidence, I am very satisfied that the police had a sufficient and proper basis for investigating the activities in question under the provisions of the Terrorism Suppression Act. The police have, in my opinion, also acted very properly in referring the evidence to my office so that I could make an assessment as to whether or not charges should be brought under the Terrorism Suppression Act. In examining the relevant provisions of the Terrorism Suppression Act, I've concluded that the legislation is unnecessarily complex, incoherent, and as a result, almost impossible to apply to the domestic circumstances observed by the police in this case. I have made available to members of the media a summary of the key provisions of the Terrorism Suppression Act. Because of my concerns about the real difficulties that exist in trying to apply the Terrorism Suppression Act to events such as those observed by the police in this case, I will be suggesting that the Attorney General consider referring that Act to the Law Commission with a view to seeing whether or not the Act should be completely reviewed. In summary, the key reason why I'm not prepared to authorise prosecutions under the Terrorism Suppression Act is because I am of the view that at this stage there is insufficient evidence to establish to the very high standard required that a group or entity was planning or preparing to commit a terrorist act as that term is defined in the legislation. Some may interpret my decision as a criticism of the police. Nothing could be further from the truth. In my view, the Commissioner and his officers have acted entirely appropriately in referring the evidence to me. I also wish to stress that the police have successfully brought to an end what were very disturbing activities. That the police did so without a single shot being fired, injury or loss of life is a tremendous reflection on the professionalism and the integrity of the New Zealand Police. The final point I wish to make is this. 16 people are facing serious charges under the Arms Act. Those trials must not be compromised by a continuation of the often ill-informed debate that has occurred in this case. Because those 16 cases have still to be heard, I will not be making any further comment about my decision or matters that could touch upon the cases that have yet to be heard. I am, however, prepared to try and assist by answering any questions which focus on the processes that I have followed or the relevant law. And I urge all of you to be extremely cautious in the way in which you report this decision and in the way in which you report any matters that may impact upon the cases that have yet to be heard. Yes, by all means.
Is this the end of the matter? If the police come to you with more evidence, can you still consider charges under this Act?
Yes, I can.
Okay. You mentioned that there's a lot of evidence you've got which won't be made public. Is that because it's not admissible because it was gathered using search warrants under the Terrorism Suppression Act and charges can't be brought under that?
Correct. Yes.
So there's evidence the police have which they will not be able to admit in court?
That is the way the position is at the moment, yes.
Do you believe there's sufficient evidence in the Arms Act given the absence of the evidence in the
intercepts? That's a question that focuses directly on the conduct of the prosecutions that are outstanding and something which I just will not engage in any comment about. I'm sorry. I can understand the reason why you've asked the question, but it's totally inappropriate for me to answer it.
You said that you think the Act is inadequate for dealing with domestic issues like this.
Yes.
It wasn't intended to be used for domestic issues like this either, so is that surprising?
There is a lot of debate about what the true intention was. All I'm prepared to say is that when focusing upon the events which the police observed in this particular case, it is, in my view, extremely difficult to apply the Terrorism Suppression Act as it is currently drafted.
Why?
There are a number of reasons, not the least of which is, and I don't know if you had a chance to look at the legislation.
Yep.
I think that most people looking at that would agree that it is, as I have described it, extremely complex, very, very tortuous in the way in which it is put together, and almost impossible to apply in a coherent manner.
So how much the standard of proof and the requirements of the elements of the charges are too complex to be proved against anybody?
Too complex, in my view, in the circumstances of the case as observed by the police in this instance.
Parliament's currently amending this Act. In fact, they're due to finish amending it this evening, if not very, very shortly. What do your comments mean for that?
Well, that is entirely a matter for Parliament. My view is that it would be very helpful if an entity such as the Law Commission had a completely new look at the Terrorism Suppression Act and looked at whether or not its provisions need to be completely reworked.
How much of a factor was the deficiency of the legislation in your decision today?
Very significant.
What about deficiency of evidence?
You're asking what is really a chicken and egg situation. There is the evidence on the one hand, the legislation on the other, and in my view, the two just don't meet. That doesn't mean to say that I wasn't very concerned about the evidence, which I saw, nor was I unconcerned about the nature of the legislation, hence my recommendation.
So you're saying that the main reason that you didn't derail the decision today is because of the poor quality of the legislation?
I didn't catch the end part of your question.
The main reason that you refused to grant the police request is because of the deficiency of the legislation?
Because the evidence doesn't fit into the legislation as it is currently drafted and as it currently exists.
Is it because the legislation requires some very detailed and specific evidence to be presented to you?
Yes, indeed.
So you'd need a target, for example. You'd need evidence of someone actually talking about doing something for that target for a particular motive, which might be to disrupt the economy.
There are multiple motives required under the provisions of the legislation. It's necessary to prove intent on many, many levels and in many circumstances. And in my view, the evidence fell short of actually meeting the very technical requirements of the Act as it is currently put together.
So all these clauses...
Is it possible that was intended in the sense that it's supposed to be a very high threshold? I mean, it's very serious areas of imprisonment required.
I, for my part, have no difficulty about a very high threshold being met. But I think that at the end of the day, the legislation has to be comprehensible and be able to work in a practical sense. I'm not worried about thresholds. I'm worried about the way in which the legislation is put together in a way, as it currently is, in my view, in a way which makes it virtually unworkable.
What you're saying could be interpreted as meaning that if the legislation had been better drafted, there might have been sufficient evidence to pursue terrorism charges against the accused.
That is a very fair assessment.
Does it mean that when you say too complex, all of these clauses have to be read together?
Yes, they do.
They're all sort of and rather than or.
Yes, indeed.
David Collins, that would be tantamount to saying that they are guilty but not of what they've been charged with.
No, I'm not going to respond to that.
That's what you just said, though.
No, I'm saying, I know I have said nothing about guilt at all. What I'm saying is that if the legislation had been drafted in a way that is different from the way in which Parliament passed it, then it is quite possible the charges may have been able to be authorised.
Do you think it's possible that the legislation will be changed now in light of how it has been
done? That will be for other people to determine, not for me.
And yep. What legislation would you have been more appropriate to sit under?
I personally think that there is a need for a Terrorism Suppression Act. Others may not agree, but I personally think that there is a need for such an act, but it has to be able to work.
So where would you say was the failure in this legislation being, you know, drafted, etc.? Who would you blame?
I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just simply saying that my interpretation of the Act makes it almost impossible to apply in practice in circumstances such as this.
It seems like someone obviously has failed in their job, surely.
That'll be for others to respond to.
Do you believe that the legislation is workable, or just not in this case?
There will be circumstances in which it can be made to work, but certainly not in fundamentally domestic circumstances.
What about if there was a sort of an IRA-style group working in New Zealand? Would that be caught by this legislation, or would you still need some really specific...
You would need some very detailed and specific evidence before you would be able to authorise prosecutions under the Terrorism Suppression Act. If you just go to the provisions, for example, you need to be able to prove, just in relation to the definition, that a person was inducing or intending to induce terror into a civilian population, unduly compelling a government to do or abstain from doing any act. The second requirement in Section 5 is that the alleged terrorist act has to be for the purpose of advancing an ideological, political or religious cause. And then just in relation to Section 5, the act in question has to be intended to cause one or more of the following outcomes: death or serious bodily injury, a serious risk to the health or safety of a population, destruction or serious damage to significant property, serious interference with a serious disruption to infrastructure facility likely to cause damage. And then if you flip to Section 25, which I think is the next logical section in this sequence, it's a terrorist act occurs, it's planned or prepared, a credible threat is made, is attempted or carried out. And then Section 13, which was the section that the police focused upon, in order to commit an offence under Section 13, you have to participate in a group or organisation that carries out or participates in the carrying out of one or more terrorist acts or activities for the purpose of enhancing the ability of that entity or group to carry out the terrorist act. So a person has to know the group or organisation that they are seen with is an entity that carries out or participates in the carrying out of a terrorist act, and they have to participate in the group for the purposes of enhancing the group to carry out a terrorist act. Now, that very quick summary might give you an indication as to why I think it's unnecessarily complicated and very, very difficult to apply.
You thought that some of the evidence might become made public at some future date.
Yes.
How would that process take place?
Through the prosecution of persons under the Arms Act.
But much of the evidence that doesn't include any of the evidence that was collected by way of intercept and by way of surveillance operations under the Terrorism and Suppression Act, presumably.
It does not include evidence that was collected by way of intercept warrants issued under the Terrorism Suppression Act. It does include evidence that was collected by way of surveillance.
Were the only intercept warrants under the Terrorism Suppression Act, or were there warrants under other acts?
Only under the Terrorism Suppression Act.
So all of that's out. How many of these tests did the police evidence fail on? I mean, for example, the credible threat test, did it pass that test?
I had to look at the evidence from the perspective of 12 different people, and the circumstances of 12 different people varied one from the other. So it would literally require a spreadsheet to show.
Did you see a credible threat from any of them?
I'm not going to go and answer that question because that could impact on the charges that are outstanding under the Arms Act.
Can you say whether anyone was close to meeting the thresholds?
A number of people were could, on one view of it, have possibly come close.
Is that to the credible threat?
No.
Or to the planning or attempt?
To meeting the criteria under the Act.
All of it, which is all
expressed
generically. When you say that the domestic, that it doesn't apply for domestic, are you meaning that people living in New Zealand, or are you meaning people coming into New Zealand from overseas? Would they have just an equal difficulty?
The fundamental problem is that the legislation focuses upon an entity that carries out a terrorist act. And if individuals are actually developing towards possibly at the end of the day carrying out a terrorist act, they aren't yet an entity that is carrying out a terrorist act. And so there is a tautology in the legislation which is extremely difficult to unravel.
So you basically have to commit a terrorist act
you don't have to, but you have to be very well down the track.
Would it now be appropriate for bail applications to be heard?
That is entirely a matter for others, and that is for the court, not for me to...
In your opinion, though, would this significantly change the circumstances sufficiently to allow more bail applications to take place?
That will be entirely a matter for the courts to determine tomorrow, as I understand it, when a number of the accused are back in court.
When did you tell the police about your decision, and what was their reaction?
The formal advice was given to the police today.
Dr. Johnson, none of the accused are due in court tomorrow except appeals in Auckland.
My advice is that a number of bail applications are scheduled to be heard in Auckland tomorrow.
So there are bail applications in the district court tomorrow?
That's what I have been advised, yes.
Have you informed all the lawyers and the families?
I have asked for them to be informed, yes. I asked for all of the lawyers to be informed.
There's been quite obviously a lot of protest and significant outcry about the whole talk of terrorism in New Zealand. What would you say to the public about this? Because, I mean, clearly people say, well, of course we thought this was ridiculous, and now it seems like it is.
Yeah. My response to that would be this, that it would be for others to comment, of course, as to whether or not the process has truly worked. But from where I sit, I think it has worked. I think it was entirely appropriate for the police to conduct their investigations, to accumulate the evidence, and then to present it to this office with a view to determining whether or not the evidence met the requirements of the Terrorism Suppression Act. And I think it's a healthy system where the police are required to reach a threshold that another person assesses.
You don't think they jumped the gun at all, or you don't think they went too far in executing warrants under the Act?
I don't think they had any option.
The way in which they did has been subject to a great deal of criticism.
I understand that, and I'm not going to comment on that because that's the subject of other inquiry.
Given that the intercept evidence is not going to be made public, probably ever, and that's a large part of the terrorist case against these accused, and that you've said that if the act was framed in a different way, they might be guilty of something.
No, I haven't said they might be guilty of something.
I said
that if the act was framed differently, charges might have been able to be brought.
But given that the evidence against them is not going to be made public, your statement to that effect, isn't that effectively labelling them as guilty of something which they're not going to be charged with?
You're the only person who's constantly using the word guilty. What I have said is that if the legislation had been framed differently, it is possible that charges under the Terrorism Act may have been able to be brought.
But doesn't that attract a stigma to them, nevertheless?
That is the reality. Clearly, if the legislation had been drafted differently, and if on the assessment of the evidence it met the requirements of a differently drafted piece of legislation, then
logically... But that's
logically,
a hypothetical that you don't need to comment on, isn't it?
Well, I'm sorry, I'm only... Sir, I'm only responding to your question.
Well, I know you are.
is there other legislation under which the police could have conducted surveillance or had intercept warrants on these accused? Is there other legislation they could have used?
We have looked very, very carefully to see if there was another more appropriate charge, and we haven't been able to find
it. So, no, sorry, I was asking, was there another piece of legislation under which they could have got their interception warrants? Or were their hands tied?
It's unlikely.
So they had to use this act to wiretap or do whatever they did to these...
Yeah. And you have to also remember, I haven't mentioned it, that of course they had to satisfy High Court judges on more than one occasion that they had sufficient evidence and justification for doing what they did.
That would seem to suggest quite a serious catch-22 here, and you've mentioned problems with the Act, but quite a serious catch-22 where in order to gather evidence under the Terrorism Suppression Act, you need to get a warrant under the Act to conduct the surveillance, and it sounds like when you've done all of that, you really need to have some fantastic evidence to lay the charges, otherwise you can't use all of the evidence that you've gathered, even if it's usable in an Arms Act or another offence.
I won't use the phrase catch-22, but I will reiterate that it's extremely difficult to apply in the domestic circumstances observed by the police in this case.
Does this leave New Zealand vulnerable?
That will be something that possibly the police would like to comment on. I am not an investigator. I don't know.
Are you satisfied that looking at the evidence and in these cases that there was no terrorist threat to New Zealand, or is it more the case that there might have been legislation tied to camps?
I think that would be I just don't think it's appropriate for me to respond to that, because that is just going too close to possibly compromising the trials that are outstanding.
Could the Security Intelligence Service have gained interception warrants to keep an eye on these people? And also use those for other charges?
I can't make any comment at all on anything that might have been available to the Security Intelligence Service.
Can you envisage a situation where the cases fall apart and then none of this evidence ever gets made public?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the first part?
Can you envisage a situation where the Arms Act charges against some of the, or all of the accused, fail to reach the threshold to take to trial, and consequently none of this evidence is ever made public?
Well, I suppose anything is possible in life, but I would be very surprised if that was the outcome.
How much time went into this in terms of Crown Law resources, you know, investigating the thing?
I don't know how many hours would have been spent. The request came through on the 29th of October. I and Deputy Solicitor General, a very experienced prosecutor, have spent most of our waking days since then working on this.
Did you report any of these criticisms of the legislation being made at the time that it was going through Parliament in the first instance, and that it was just something that people have already predicted would happen?
I know that there have been a lot of criticisms of the legislation. I personally was not involved in this office at all in 2002 when the Act was passed.
But are you aware? You're aware there were a lot of criticisms.
I'm aware of a number of lawyers, in particular, who have made criticisms of the legislation.
And those chickens are the ones that came to roost this time.
I don't know if anyone's actually had to go through the detailed examination of the legislation against a given fact situation to be able to see what has emerged for us during the course of this exercise. I think most of the criticisms were more of a philosophical and broader level.
So are you formally recommending that the government refer the legislation to the Law Commission? Do you write to them, or do you...
I make a suggestion, and I've already... initiated that.
So you've spoken to Sir Geoffrey about that?
No, I've spoken to the Attorney General about that.
What did he say?
I think he is seriously considering it.
When did you inform the Attorney General of your decision today?
The Attorney General was formally notified this afternoon. Thank you.